everybody, and welcome to the Coconut Wireless. My name is Aaron Hoff. I am the founder of the Kiala Foundation, and today's going to be a really good podcast, guys. I actually just did the same thing I did a bunch of times, but I forgot to press record. But luckily, this was about maybe 5 minutes into the podcast, I realized this. So now we are recording. But today's going to be a good podcast, you guys. I got some really good people here. I have my friend Denise Sullivan and Dr. Daryl McKenna. He's also here. Gerald McKenna. I always just know him as Dr. McKenna. And and he's gonna. They both are in the area that I've been working in for the past 24 years, and it's in the drug rehabilitation and the prevention side. And we're just gonna talk about some good stuff today. So, but just before we get into it, I want these. Oh, and I got my wife Celeste here. You guys don't want to forget that one. Hi, honey. Okay, I gotta slow down. And so if you wouldn't mind talking about your just let people know who you are and what your credentials are, Mr. McKenna, that'd be awesome. We'll start off with there.
Okay. Well, my name is Jerry McKenna. I've been working in the field of addiction medicine for about 30 years. My primary qualifications, I'm certified by the American Board of Psychiatry and Neurology and Psychiatry, and by the American Board of Preventive Medicine in Addiction Medicine. I was an accidental tourist. My older son and I decided to sail from Los Angeles to Hawaii. And we did that, and we sailed into Hanalei Bay one morning in July of, I think it was 1987. And, you know, it was a beautiful morning. The waterfalls were coming down all across the mountains, and it was like sailing into paradise. And as we were sailing in, I realized that this was going to be home. I had lived in Boston for a long time and practiced there. I'd been in Los Angeles for a number of years, but Kauai was the perfect place. And I mean, I knew it before we even anchored. And it's been a great place to practice addiction medicine. And I finally had to stop doing general psychiatry in 2005 because I wasn't able to do both specialties. So from about 2005 on, I've been doing addiction medicine, but started doing addiction medicine here in 1989.
And if you could just touch what is addiction medicine mean when you say?
Well, it's a good question. It's an entirely new field, and it is about 40 years old in the formal sense. I did my residency at Harvard Medical School, and when I was in the second year there, there was a doctor who had trained in the same center, and he came back from NIH or NIMH and gave a talk on the norepinephrine theory of depression. And at the end of his lecture, I realized that the field of psychiatry was revolutionized, that it was now going to be much more science-based, and he introduced the whole concept of neurotransmitters. It took neurology about another 4 or 5 years to catch on with that. But as we've learned more and more about the brain, we have been able to outline and really pinpoint the what we would call the addiction circuitry in the brain. Now, people have been dealing with addiction for millennia. The very first addictionologist, I think, in our history was Dr. Benjamin Rush. He's known as the father of psychiatry, but he was also one of the signers of the Declaration of Independence, and the first person, as far as I know, to say that alcoholism was a disease. And for the 150 years after that, it was treated as a bad habit, as was much of the rest of addiction. It was always looked upon as being a bad habit, a moral failing, when we, in medicine, understood more and more from the 1960s on forward that this was really a brain disease, and it met the criteria for chronic relapsing diseases. And in that sense, it has more in common with illnesses like diabetes mellitus, high blood pressure, chronic heart disease, chronic gastrointestinal disease, and we need to treat it as such. And so that's where I've spent most of my time. I'm a clinical professor at the UH School of Medicine, so we have the opportunity to have medical students and residents come and join us in our small addiction medicine program in Lihue, but to realize that we, as a physician, I have an obligation really to train physicians in this field because very little of it is taught in medical school. And I had great offers to go to Oahu, but no, I mean, Kauai is the place where I'm going to live the rest of my life. I grew up in a small town in upstate New York, and Lihue is about as big a city as I want to deal with.
Feels just like home. Mm-hmm. That's awesome. And yeah, that's awesome to hear you talk about that because just the disease part is when that's understood is when a person understands that, that's when the most recovery begins. That's where it's always began. And I watch people walk back from the gates of hell when they realize that. And we also have Denise Solve. And Denise, let's hear a little bit about you again, since I didn't press record.
Okay. So my name's Denise Sullivan, and I am a family therapist, addiction. I'm a specialist in addiction. Excuse me, and I've also been a primary therapist, and I've worked all over the country, including Tahiti. I went outside the country and worked in Tahiti for a while in treatment centers, working with clients that have alcoholism and drug addiction. And anyway, like Jerry, the first time I got off the plane about 20-some-odd years ago in Lihue, I just felt that this island was special. And so I've been vacationing here for many years. And then last December, I got asked to work out here in the adolescent treatment program. Unfortunately, that's not going to happen for the adolescents out here. There's been some problems with that, but I was supposed to be the lead clinician there. So anyway, I was fortunate enough to meet Aaron Hoff when I came here, and I had heard a lot about him and what he was doing with the kids in the Calla Foundation as far as prevention, and a lot of people don't realize how important that is. Because kids are really hard to get to. And he does a good job of it because he lets the kids be themselves, and he's very aware of what their problems are. So I got talking with Aaron out here, and I told him that I would like to be part of that Kiala Foundation, and I would like to do the recovery part because I've had a lot of experience with every population from prison to celebrities, and I have a lot of knowledge about the underlying causes of addiction. So I also have personal experience. I'm sober almost 45 years, and my family has struggled with addiction since, oh my gosh, I can't remember when, but I know that I had a brother that was a drug addict, and he died of a heroin overdose way back. He started using in 1965. So I've kind of watched how addiction has evolved in our country and how bad it is, and it's not getting any better. So I have a passion for working in this field, and a lot of it is just to keep my brother's spirit alive, and my husband who relapsed and never made it back to sobriety, and he died. So I came here, I came here so that I could work with young people, and I could also work with their families and spread a message of hope, because there is no hope over here from what I can see. And the families, there's such a big stigma, and in the culture too, I think, you know, they have a lot of pride, and they look at addiction as it's a weakness. And it's not a weakness at all. It's just like what Jerry described. You know, it's a brain disease, and it's a threefold disease. It's mental, spiritual, and physical. So I've also been an educator. I taught in a college up in New Hampshire for 3 years, teaching students to be alcohol and drug counselors. So I feel like I would really like to use my experience over here and really work at what I love.
Thanks, Denise. And, you know, it's just... it's just, for me, it's just so, what's the word I could put? It's just so, I'm so inspired by having people like you guys in my coming into my life. And because I just want the best for these kids, you know, and my wife's been around too. She's seen how my life has been dedicated. And so has hers, because I bring kids into our home and this, you know, she's basically... opened her, you want to say a few words, Les? Just opened her home and just always been there for kids.
I'm thankful. I'm thankful for you, Denise, that you're here. And just, I love how you're using, I mean, you've been through a lot and you've had some really tragic experiences, losses, and you're actually using it as fuel and to give you that drive to help others, and it's beautiful. You're turning it into a beautiful gift. Mm-hmm. And Dr. McKenna, I love your story. I love how you sailed to Kauai. That is just the most epic story. It sounds like it came right out of a movie. But, I mean, your background is phenomenal. So, yeah, I'm just thankful that you're here, too.
Yeah, and
well, I am, too. And part of my story is that I'm an alcoholic in recovery, and I have about 34 years in AA, and I love the program of recovery, and it really helps, I think, as Denise was saying, to be part of the recovery community as well as part of the community that really tries to focus on the disease of addiction. And I couldn't agree more with Denise that this is a hidden problem here as it is everywhere. And the stigma is alive and well and throughout the 50 states, and certainly alive and well here. And I think people feel very hopeless and helpless and don't really know where to go or what to do. And with the limited resources that we have, I think we try to do the best we can. And I think your adolescent program is really outstanding and very individually focused. I mean, I've heard you many times talk about your experiences with adolescents, and I know that they immediately are attracted to you. I'm an old man, so they're much less attracted to me.
Well, I'm turning 47 this November, so that's getting up there, you know. But I guess mentally, I'm still a kid. But yeah, you know, I was just one of the things that I really like to let people know, and it's just becoming educated so that people can understand what kind of resources are lacking here and what kind of resources are needed here. So, I mean, for me, my biggest experience, I was born and raised on Kauai, and I've been sober 20. I got sober when I was very young. I was 23 years old. And so I know what it's like to get sober over here on the island at a young age. And for me, it's what I've seen, and it's very consistent over the years, is there's absolutely nothing being done to educate these kids about this thing that's coming after them to basically kill them. You know, this the culture here, the lifestyle is basically, it's like sheep going to the slaughterhouse. And for me, it's always been like, I just, this environment that I've created, my life is, I dedicate my life to the kids, because when I got sober, when I was young at 23, I couldn't hang around with my friends. So I grabbed kids that were 13, 14 years old, and I hung out with them and just took them surfing and this. So they basically were my friends, and they actually, without even knowing it, they saved my life. They carried me through a time where I needed to be doing fun things and this and that. So I was taking these kids surfing, you know what I mean? And then I watched them getting picked off as they got a little older by the drug culture here and the alcohol. And so I seen that. I seen a huge, like, these kids walking into, like I said, the slaughterhouse. They're just getting caught up. And so that's why I created the Kiala Foundation, because I am a huge advocate of having a program that grabs these kids as soon as they, even before they hit junior high, so you can hold these kids close and carry them through their high school years, the most dangerous time of their life, the most vulnerable times of their lives, you know. And even though I've learned that, you know, you can't save all the kids, you know, a lot of them go back into that, get caught up in, but they're well educated. They know there's help. They know there's, they just know there's help. They'll always have a place home that they call home. It may not be their home, but it's like with us, when you feel like you're loved, it's home. And do you feel the same way about that? You know, just looking at our environment here and the landscape, do you feel the same way that there's a lack of resources for these kids?
Jerry.
Yeah, this is Jerry. Yeah, I think there is a huge lack of resources. And there's also a lack of awareness. I have two sons. One is 18 and one is 48. So they kind of span the generations. And my son, you know, went through school here. He's now in college, but of course, college is a virtual experience for the first 6 months. He's at UC San Diego, but he's here. I mean, he goes online and does his coursework. And I'm hoping that with COVID-19 that the kids are able to go back to high school, to graduate, and to, you know, go on to the college of their choice or whatever career area they want to go in. I think there is a lack of awareness in the school system about the degree of alcohol and drug addiction in the class. And I don't know how we penetrate that. it may be part of a learning process. I remember when I first got here, I went to one of the high schools, and because I had already been seeing adolescents, and I said, well, you know, would you like to have me come in and talk to the teachers about addiction in the high schools? And I was told, I'm sorry, we don't have any addiction in our school. You'd be wasting your time to do that. And that was the first time that I really recognized the total lack of awareness of the severity of addiction here. And when I say here, it's every place I've ever been. It was there in upstate New York. It was there in Boston. It was there in Los Angeles. And it's here in all the islands. But it's one thing to know that it's here, but people can put blinders on and ignore what's happening in the classroom. And, you know, my son is very open and talks about what he sees in the classroom. My older son has never had a drink in his life. He knows that the genes would be awful if he drank. And I've talked to my younger son about it also. So neither one of them have had any experience so far with alcohol and drugs, and I hope it stays that that way, because it's the only safe way to get through our school system.
Yeah, it's pretty. Yeah, that's just how it is, you know.
So what I see, some of the problems are over here. Number one is what you just said, Jerry. We have to get inside the schools, and we have to educate the educators about this disease and how serious it is and how it is progressive, and that a lot of these kids have parents that are drug addicts or alcoholics themselves, and it's generational. And from what I can see, this is a small island, and it's really been happening for a long time, which isn't unusual, because even over in Massachusetts, Nantucket and Martha's Vineyard has quite a bit of alcoholism and addiction. But just living here and observing, you know, what I've observed, I mean, just since I've been here, you know, there's been so many suicides, and every one of them, just about, they were under the influence of alcohol and or drugs. And so what we have to do is start educating families. We have to find ways to actually educate them so that they don't look at it like it's a moral issue, and that there's not such a stigma attached, and that they can start helping their kids and helping themselves. And it's a family disease, you know, and there's a lot to learn about it. I started a group over here on Thursday nights in Kalowa for families. And Aaron and Celeste attend mostly every week. And it's growing, but they're really liking to learn about the disease and about enabling and codependency and all these things that go along with addiction. And honestly, when Aaron says this is a deadly illness, if you have kids and they continue to use, or if the parents continue to use, there's only three places you can go with that, and it's jails, institution, and death. And I've seen it in my own family. It's no joke.
And you're pretty much the only drug rehabilitation place for anybody to go over here, correct?
Jerry.
Jerry?
Well, we've had Te Alapono and the McKenna Recovery Center. We started Te Alapono in 1989, and that's been continuous. It's been an outpatient program, and we usually have quite a few people coming into it, and we try to make it as long a program as possible, because one of the advantages of outpatient treatment versus residential is you can keep people for a longer period of time. The insurance companies pay for usually a short period of time, so we just continue people on when their insurance stops paying. It doesn't really cost us more to have somebody stay in treatment. But we are a private practice of addiction medicine, and so we don't depend on any funds from the state. In fact, we have never really taken any funds from the state since I've been here. There was one time when there was we had a women's program, and we did that for a year through a grant from ADAD, and I think that's the only grant we had. And at the end of the year, I said, they said, well, are you going to renew? And I said, no, I don't think we're going to renew. We already know how we can help these women in our program. And they got very upset with me. And I said, well, I don't need to take your money. We can build the insurance company and do the treatment that we've been doing under the grant. So I guess it's my personal bias as a physician that I want to treat this as a chronic relapsing illness and use a medical approach as well as a psychiatric approach. And Denise is very accurate in saying this disease, like most diseases, have a physical, a spiritual, and a family disease concept all wrapped into one.
Yeah, and I was and with the Kiala Foundation, my vision has always been to have the doors open so we can have a home. So these kids, and the nice thing is when the kids are in school and they have, you know, we can actually, and they're in junior high and their freshman years, and they really love the program. They're drawn to the program, and it's
And you pick them up.
Yeah, and we pick them up. We basically make no barrier to entry. We've always made it so that if a kid wants to come, they're coming. That, and my gyms have always been, if a kid walks in the door, they're the first priority. My members know that they are role models, and they play a big part. I mean, even just to the casual person who just shows up to work out at the gym, they know that their membership is keeping the doors open for these kids. And for the prevention side, what I've learned over the years is that's the most important thing, is having a consistent home open for these kids. And we've operated off of donations from the community. We just did our trail run virtually this year, and we raised just about enough money to hopefully get us through the year. We always need more so we can actually expand and have more kids. But that is one of the most important thing that I think that Kauai could have right now. Is not just because it's my program I created, but it's the program like the Kiala Foundation, because of the fact that it's consistently available for any kid that walks through the doors, and they're getting educated, they're being loved on and taught life skills, so they can weather the storms that are coming their way, you know?
Yeah, and from what I can see, you know, just knowing Aaron and Celeste, the, you know, short time that I have, what I can see is different with their program and other programs that I've worked in across the country, is they're sincere and there's just so much love, and that they're very approachable. And this is what kids need. They don't need to be judged. You know, they need to be loved. I can see that. That's one of the reasons I want to be a part of this whole foundation.
And one of the goals that I'm trying to achieve, hopefully this year, is to do camps for the kids. You know, where we'll have, it's kind of like a, just say like it's an outpatient program similar to like what you do, but you'll have the kids come in for a weekend, and then during the week they'll go to the CrossFit classes, and then they'll come in for another weekend, and then they can come in for, you know, and I have some great programs set up from some friends that do by Navy SEALs that do break them down, build them up. And those are very, very effective. And then they go into the gym. Once they get established into the gym and they build confidence, and then the aftercare is them staying in the program. And hopefully, you know, it's materializing in God's time. And what are your thoughts on something like that, Jerry?
Well, I think you're doing a great job, and you have exactly the kind of approach that is needed for adolescents. And as you're talking, and I'm thinking about this this sensor that the Blue Ribbon panel of people, of leaders from all over the island that came together to try to get that healing, a family healing center on Kauai. And it got built. The Case Brothers donated the land. The state supplied $5 million to get the building built, and we can't get it open. And yet, what Janice is talking about and you're talking about is exactly what that program was established to do. And I don't know if there is a way to incorporate what you're doing as part of that, if we can ever find a way to get it open.
I'm very reluctant. I mean, it took him 16 years to, and it's not, I'm not jabbing at the people, you know, it's just, it took him the state 16 years to get that thing built, and then it got shut down, for me, my biggest experience with that and watching this over the years is there's just too much red tape. And there's too many people with too many other things distracting them to be able to do something like that properly. And it's nothing against, and it's just they got their hands full, and like for me, I'm just hyper focused on this one issue, and that's how I truly believe that the only way the solution will come about is by backing people like what we do that are hyper focused and do this very well.
Yeah, and, you know, Jerry, you know what it takes working with these clients. It takes a lot of skill and a lot of experience. These programs can't just be run by anybody. They need people that have experience with sobriety, working in treatment. I mean, it takes a lot, and especially working with the families. And out here in Hawaii, it's going to be a feat to, you know, get people engaged and to start to open up a little bit to learn more about it.
Yeah, and it's and for me, I just know, like, deep down in my heart, I have this feeling in my gut. I know there's a formula to do this, and it's very simple. You know, it doesn't take much. It just takes it's not having a building, it's not having this places, it's not having the fancy things. It's having the formulas and having the right people that are passionate about doing this. And it's and that to me is like, I'm one person and I've been passionate about this. And in the past 24 years, I mean, I've affected thousands of people just from being one person. You know, if I look at the run, there's thousands, this run that we just did, there were 7 countries that took part in it. People all over the United States took part of it. And that's just a testament of what one person can do that's very passionate. And that's where my energy is focused with what we're doing. Let's like how you could not do psychiatry and addiction medicine. And it's and that's kind of the place where I'm at.
You have to make a choice of what you're gonna do and where your focus is going to be.
Yeah.
And Denise is right. The one thing we know about addiction and recovery is that it's not a short-term process. And almost all the residential programs are geared to what the insurance will pay. And that's 4 weeks, unless somebody has a lot of money and is able to stay longer. I mean, the Hazelden Betty Ford program, the coin of the realm is 28 days or 30 days. And that's totally insurance driven.
And we haven't even looked into the insurance world. We've been blessed to have people who have come over here and witnessed the program and seen what we do. And they've all our sponsors have never left because they believe what we do over here. And majority of, I mean, there's some, I have a handful of people on the island who have actually sponsored the event and locally. But majority of my sponsor and the money I raise comes from the mainland. You know, I have beautiful people from the mainland who really love Kauai, and they pour into it. You know, they pour into the locals over here because they understand that this is one of the greatest. I think the greatest need on this island is what we're doing right now, is giving these kids the education and awareness about what's coming to kill them, what's going to take their life, without them even seeing it coming.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, I was thinking when Aaron was talking earlier, you know, even when they leave this program, after they've spent time in it with these people, at least the seed is planted. And from what I've seen working in treatment, you know, when the seed is planted, they usually end up coming back. That's if they stay alive.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a mix of kids, too. So for everybody listening out there, this is for whether they're, you know, involved in drugs and alcohol or not. But by being a part of this program, they receive tools, life-saving tools, and they know where to go, who to turn to. They understand the challenge of drugs and alcohol. So if they haven't encountered it yet, they'll know how to handle that situation once they face it.
Yeah, so I guess, you know, coming with this whole podcast is, I guess, would be just educating people that, you know, that Kauai has a very huge lack of resources for probably the most pressing epidemic that the island faces would be drugs and alcohol right now. And it's totally overlooked.
Suicide.
Suicides, you know, it's all tied together. And we are people who have been fighting on the front lines right here with this thing. You know, Jerry, myself, Denise, and my wife, and I have a whole army of a lot of local people who've gotten sober, like Billy Cuarto, David Cavallo, and these are guys that have high standings in the community, and. We're just trying to bring awareness to this and let people know that there's other programs that are, like the Kiala Foundation, it is fighting 110% every day to make sure that we can be in front of these kids every day. And to let everybody know out there, all you listeners, you know, that you could go to the Kiala Foundation website and look into what we do. If you want to look into a resource that is geared straight for kids, this is a solid resource that is it's being created, and it works. And that the bottom line is it works. And I wouldn't be pouring my life into this thing if it didn't work. I would be trying to find something else. And just like what Jerry does, his program works, and I have a lot of friends who go to his program. There's some right now that, you know, that I've been dealing with that ended up going to Mahilona, and now they're luckily, fortunately, they didn't commit suicide, and now they're working with Jerry. And it's great. You know, it's great. And
I think right now with COVID-19 and more people working from home, I think it's putting additional stress on families. Yeah. If there already is an addiction problem within the family, having everybody stuck at home, in a sense, really increases the likelihood that if people do have an alcohol or drug problem, it's going to get worse, and it's going to impact the family constellation more negatively than if they were going to work and then coming home. So there's a lot going on this small island, and I think we have been very lucky that there's been minimal exposure and number of cases of COVID-19. And I don't know what's going to happen when it opens up in a few days, whether we're going to be able to really screen people and keep the island healthy.
Yeah, it's kind of like, I always like to describe it like it's kind of like a tsunami. The ocean's pulling back right now. And there's been a lot of financial aid through the state and stuff. You know, there's a lot of, but a lot of that stuff will run out. You know, a lot of that, it's running its course right now. And it's, now the wave's going to start coming in. And that's one of the reasons why these programs are vital for people to know that they're available, because one of the things that all the parents I deal with, a lot of the parents is, and it's scary because they go, Aaron, you're our last resort. We want to help our kids. We have nowhere to go. We look it up on the internet. We try to look, there's nowhere for us to go. You're our last resort. And parents tell me this, and it's like, it puts a huge burden on me, knowing that, like, hey, I think we're probably the last street, the last house on the block for these kids. And it's because a lot of the money's disappearing in the government, and all those programs are starting to, they're going to be disappearing, you know, so.
And a lot of the treatment centers are closing.
A lot of the treatment centers are closing, and it's just that's the effect. So how, if there's no net to catch these kids after the, I mean, it's going to get bad before it gets, that's my prediction. I hope not, but I'm pretty much very on it when I see these things, and I'm aware of these things, and I'm sure you're in the same position too, Jerry, you know, it's, cause you guys, you guys are running full steam ahead too, with a lot of people right now, huh?
We try to take whoever, you know, comes in and is willing to, you know, follow some direction. But I think there is going to be a marked economic downturn once all of this money does run out. So I don't know if it's going to be a repeat of what happened in 2008, but I think families are going to be economically distressed. The island is going to be economically distressed. And whenever that happens, I think addiction just gets worse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there's a lot of work to be done. I'm really glad, Aaron, that you and your wife are doing this. And having Denise work with you, I think, is going to be just making this an outstanding program with Denise and her focus on family evaluation and family therapy. So I think that's the bright side.
Yeah. I wanted to say this too, Jerry, and for anybody out there, on Thursday nights in Kaloa at the Salvation Army at 6:30, we have a community meeting, and it involves alcoholics, addicts, family members, and people who have lost loved ones to addiction. So it's a free resource for people who don't know what to do and want to get more educated and get some support.
Yeah, it's a really good meeting.
Good.
Yeah,
and great. Thanks for getting that word out there, because you know, you started that, and I think it's going to be very successful. Yeah. And, you know, the coconut wireless, I guess, is alive and well, but if people are underground, and that's what addiction always has been, right, is the underground disease, it's very hard to really get people to come in and participate. So you're doing a wonderful job down there in getting that going. And I think the more people that come in, the more families that come in, the more families will start talking to other families and realize that this is, that's where the heart of the problem is. It's in, within the family.
Right. And we started a program up in New Hampshire, Massachusetts, 4 years ago, and it started out small. And I was really worried that it wasn't going to catch on, but it did. After a while, it caught on. It's still going on now. So I wanted to do that here because it was so healing for families.
Consistent heart giving back. Hard work. It's a passionate.
Yeah, you have to give it back to keep it.
Yep. And also, so with the Kiala Foundation, we just did our trail run event virtually this year. We raised about $300,000, if I'm not mistaken, and we're about $100,000 shy of our goal to carry us through the next year. So if you guys want to, I have a fundraiser page that is up, and it's a brilliant idea, but it's a horrible idea. So my goal is to raise $100,000, and I'm already raised about $20,000, and when I hit my goal, I'm going to walk from Kekaha CrossFit all the way down to Poipu CrossFit to Anahola CrossFit all the way to Hanalei. And that's going to be nonstop. So it's like, and I'm 240 pounds, all muscle. and it's going to be, I had my friend talk to me, who's this aerobic capacity trainer. The guy's like done Ironmans and all this stuff. And there's another podcast with him describing how I'm not going to make it. But I told him that I'm going to make it, and it's going to be, so it's going to be a exciting little adventure coming up. So if you guys want to donate to that and make me suffer, and it's always a fun, it's always an exciting thing. I don't know why I came up with the idea, but it's one of those things that, you know, I do. And
you're going to be like Forrest Gump. I think you're going to be followed by just a huge group of supporters.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of people. There's actually a lot of people who are wanting to help me make it across the finish line, which is going to be, it's probably going to take me like 2.5 days. I'm going to do it nonstop. I'm going to try not to sleep. And yeah, it's going to be exciting. But yeah, so, and we are, yeah, so just go check it out, you guys, the Kiala Foundation. I'm thankful for you, Jerry, coming on the podcast and, you know, just having, you know,
your
brain involved with this is, and to hear everything that goes on in there and all the knowledge you have is just so awesome, you know, and it's,
well,
just,
thanks for inviting me. It was fun to be on.
Yeah, and Denise too. I think this is awesome. Jerry's first podcast, you guys.
Yeah, I know. This is my first.
And Denise's first podcast.
Yes, I've been on the radio and TV before, but never did a podcast.
So this is like
natural.
This is awesome. So
everybody, reach out, please. Whoever's out there, and you know, we can help clear the confusion. Just reach out.
Yeah,
and we love you guys.
There's help. So thank you guys for tuning in on the Coconut Wireless, and we are going to head on out.
Very good. Aloha.